You're listening to FMGRadio.com.
Hi, I'm George Capanelli. Welcome to Age Nation Radio Magazine, where people, passion, and purpose meet.
Hi, I'm Alan Huttner. We're your hosts at the place where boomers, elders, and conscious members of younger generations come to listen, learn, and participate in a lifestyle revolution. Join us for in-depth interviews with world-class experts and authors, provocative commentaries, humorous and informative special features, interspersed with some great music.
Today, we're going to be talking about one of the most critical challenges of the 21st century. And you'll be amazed at how it'll affect all of our lives and what it will mean specifically to you. In fact, this topic is so important, we're going to devote two whole shows to it. Today, you'll sit in on a terrific interview Alan did with mythologist and storyteller Michael Mead.
We also have music interludes with the Beatles, Van Morrison and Bob Dylan, and Dr. Pat Love, our resident expert on sex and intimacy, talking about sex at 88. That's every time I say sex at 88, I'm going, all right, I got a ways to go, but I want to be doing it, you know? All right, we have other surprises, including our weekly editorial, as well as George and me conversing on other issues of significance.
So welcome to Age Nation Radio Magazine, where people come to celebrate living consciously and aging wisely in the 21st century.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now.
Well, the Beatles, when I'm 64, and...
I mean, who would have thought, right, when we first heard that we'd be sitting here doing what? Talking about when we're over 64.
I mean, how old were you when that was a popular song?
I can't even remember.
You can't even remember. maybe we'll ask them to come back together again for when I'm 74.
Sure, that'd be a heck of an idea.
All right.
You know? So, look, we're going to talk about that topic, that least discussed and most critical challenge facing our world in the 21st century. And it's not greenhouse gases, declining educational standards, limited health care, or the absurd amount of control over our lives currently being exercised by large corporations. Each of these things is, of course, a major challenge. But the one we're talking about is the fact that the world's population is aging. Yeah, the world's population is getting older and much more rapidly than most experts predicted. Originally, demographic experts thought this revolution was only going to be a blip on the screen, you know, like the proverbial rabbit going through the snake. And that once boomers, those are people who were born in the years following World War II, that's 1944 to 1964, once these people made their journey through the lifeline, things would go back to the way they were. But that's not true. Now these experts are saying that the demographic revolution will not end any time in the foreseeable future. In fact, the aging of the world's population will continue for the first two-thirds or more of this century.
So what does this mean to all of us, and how does it impact you and me? The aging of the world's population might not seem very important, not when compared to all of the other problems that George mentioned earlier, and as well as the economy, the ecology, social and political changes we face. But what if the fact that the world's population is aging actually at the root, what if that cause is at the root of many of these other problems? You see, increasing longevity and decreasing birth rates leads to a shrinking tax base, and a shrinking tax base spells budget shortfalls, reduction of environmental standards, education, healthcare problems. Increasing longevity means there will be a lot more people who will need more support as they grow older, and decreasing birth rates mean that there will be a lot fewer people to pay for the service and support that this older population requires. At least that's under the current trend. So hopefully we'll be able to offer solutions to these things.
So an aging population does a lot of other things too. You know, we're going to have to redesign products and services. There's going to be all kinds of questions about the distribution of wealth, moral and ethical issues about end-of-life questions, things about what kinds of food we eat and exercises we do, the kinds of transportation systems we require, and the kind of living communities that we build. We can't build things the way we're currently doing now. It also requires us to look at our obsession with youth, which in America is beyond an obsession, and at our denial of aging and death, which is beyond denial. It's an obliteration of those two topics.
Yeah, see, I agree with you, although a lot of people don't want to face it. I mean, so I think people who age a little more wisely and they're healthier, they're willing to say, you know, I'm okay with the aging. I know what to do with it. But a lot of people don't know that.
And so, we're going to talk later, especially with our guest, about that question, you know.
Uh-huh.
So let me give you a couple of facts that are really incredible. You know, one person joins the over 50 crowd every 7 seconds. One person every 71 seconds is diagnosed with early onstage Alzheimer's. That's just a stunner. 10,000 boomers retire every day. And according to some studies, only 1 out of every 9 of those boomers have enough resources to take care of themselves for the rest of their lives. Boomers and elders control a significant portion of the U.S. wealth. They also earn $2 trillion annually. They account for the largest percentage of spending on health care, health insurance, leisure travel, high-priced cars, and a significant percentage on personal care products and clothing. And this is the real kicker. Boomers and elders will oversee the largest transfer of wealth over the course of the next couple of decades in the entire history of the world.
Yeah, that's a critical key. Where is that going to go? How do the resources help rather than harm this aging system?
And that's one of the questions that our generations have to answer. What are we doing with our money? Are we going to invest it in the future? Are we going to hoard it the way people have in the past?
Mm-hmm.
Is it even going to be possible? I mean, that's a whole other show that we need to talk about.
And, you know, I'm glad you're saying world population, because it's not just about the United States. Japan has the oldest population in the world, and Spain has the second oldest. America is younger by comparison, but in the foreseeable future, we will still have over 50% of our population over 50. Think about that, 50% of our population, more than 150 million people, Americans over age 50. What do we do about it? And, you know, maybe you would answer this, George. I mean, I don't know. Do you know?
Nobody knows. And the real truth is nobody's talking about it either. You know, you walk through the corridors of Washington or our state capitals or even our city halls. And to a large extent, there's a whole conversation about budget cuts and a whole lot of pretending that this aging of the world population isn't happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what people are doing is they're talking about the repeal of health care or changes in education as if these things were separate, disconnected topics. That's the problem in a world in which economics has become the way we measure everything. People live with the illusion that these issues are just separate items or columns on some kind of balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't a new argument. I mean, since the 30s, there's been this struggle between what's called the John Maynard Keynes School, which talks about government stimulus and deficit spending. And then there's the Chicago School, Milton Friedman, who proposed that we ought to have small government and free market economy. You know, and yet the fact is that the free market economy and the Chicago School's approach, no matter what anybody says, has never been successful. And yet it hasn't deterred Britain and France and Greece and Ireland and Spain, to name just a few countries, from making draconian budget cuts while giving more freedom and incentives to business.
And as usual with these debates, they're extreme right and left, and somewhere in the middle lies a solution. That's what what we're going to help you find. And it's also clear at the present time that the mood in Washington and the various state capitals, that they're not ready for this. And we need to make a change, reduce spending and reduce the budget. Well, I don't know. Of course, with a Republican-controlled House, as you were talking about, they're already talking about changing the health care that was passed after a lot of compromise. So we've got substantial problems ahead. Age Nation Radio Magazine is hopefully going to be your home base for solutions.
Yeah. And we better be.
We better be. Or we will be somewhere else besides on these microphones. Hey, stay with us. Stay with us. More to come.
We are Age Nation. We will soon be 150 million people strong. We're 40 and older and represent the fastest growing population segment. We weren't born yesterday and we're not dying tomorrow. We work, create, and contribute. We buy the majority of new cars, invest, travel, control 80% of this nation's wealth and at least that much of our faculties. AgeNation.com is our website. It's a doorway to valuable information, inspiration, radio, live and online education and entertainment, digital magazine, books, products, discounts, and more, all from some of the leading wisdom keepers of our time. AgeNation.com, for the generations who change the world and have the wisdom, experience, and the need to do it again. AgeNation.com, it's free. Sign up today.
Come back to the revolution. Age Nation Radio.
Age Nation Radio.
Recently, Alan had a chance to talk with Michael Mead, well-known mythologist and storyteller. I've known Michael since the late 1980s when he, the poet Robert Bly, and psychologist James Hillman were involved in launching the men's movement in the United States. In this interview, Michael talks about his new book, Fate and Destiny, which I can tell you is one of the most seminal works of our time, especially if one is interested in living a life of genuine meaning and purpose.
Michael Mead on the line with us. We're back into the book, Fate and Destiny, The Two Agreements of the Soul. And Michael was talking about his work with youth, his work with veterans coming back from the war or conflict, and then brought into a part of the book about working with elders, as you pointed out, a statistic, and it may even be from our Age Nation folks and George Capinelli about the incredible number, more than half the population being over 50 and where we're headed with all that. Tied into, Michael, if you would, that fate or destiny, this combination related to our soul in a life incarnation, has purpose, and that as people age or go into the second half of their life, they may feel not knowing that purpose. But I would imagine everybody has it, and we just don't call on the wisdom enough of, let's say, the seniors who could be mentors to the youth that don't know whether they should get a job or build a shelter.
Yeah, well, but there's a big problem here. Yeah. I think the chapter is called What Not to Forget.
Uh-huh.
And in it I talk about, I think I call it the great forgetting. And here's what I'm working with as a way of understanding what's going on culturally.
Yeah.
More people are living longer and longer. And it used to be that becoming older meant becoming wiser. But I would argue that right now people are living longer without becoming wiser. As a matter of fact, you have an increasingly dependent, what would be the elders, I call them the olders.
Yeah.
And because an elder is someone who has extracted the wisdom from their own lived experience, and that wisdom becomes a kind of medicine that can be given to other people in the culture and to the culture in its collective sense. But instead of the elders being the distributors of medicine, they are really the consumers of drugs.
No.
And I don't wish anybody any pain. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about a kind of reversal of the role of elders into becoming older consumers right until the end. And, of course, it's a battle in terms of Social Security and all that. But there's a bigger issue here. And then I also noticed that more and more people call it Alzheimer's, call it what you will, more and more people forget who they are before they die. Well, this is a shocking idea in terms of a person was supposed to die with a full knowledge of who they are and what life they have lived. And so to have people dying without knowing who they are is, let me say it another way. The elders have always been traditional, the keepers of deep knowledge and the keepers of the wisdom of what the world is about. Now we have people who could be elders, but they are really more often than not forgetful olders. And the exact people who should be remembering the essence of culture are voting for things that help to unravel culture and remove the sense of community. I mean, I'm putting a lot of things in there at once.
Yes, yes.
And so I call it the great forgetting.
Yeah, well, we need to remember, I mean, I guess at the core, and you were talking about the question, well, it's in the book here, and that I turned to this that section that you mentioned, you say here, when it comes to the question of whether or not you have become yourself, there is no way to cheat. There can be no excuses, no real complaints, and no big reprieves. There is no higher authority to call upon for the final exam. It's not about things outside oneself. And, you know, somewhere along the line, I learned that this journey that we're all on with our soul, like you said, there's the fate and destiny aspects of it. There's life lessons to be learned. But at the core, wouldn't you say it's to know who you are at the center, even beyond or with regard to ego persona, if you know what I mean, what you who you think you are. And that's a great mission for people in the second half of the life. And once they get to that place, then they can enjoy other things, maybe the externals, you know?
Well, and a certain vitality. One reason people lose vitality is they are drifting away typically from the core imagination of their life. And I'm using imagination to mean this design that a person brought in their soul to begin with. And the purpose of life is to fulfill the mission and the dream of the soul, not to acquire a certain portfolio or a good address. And so I use a Hasidic story, an old Hasidic story in that chapter, and it leads to this one question. So it's about a rabbi, so on and so forth. But it gets to the end, and it turns out that God, and to me God is the fewest number of letters you can use to refer to the divine. It doesn't matter to me too much which God. Uh-huh. But the idea is that at the end of life, as most cultures and religions would suggest, there is a judgment or a final test, but it's not an essay question or a multiple choice. It's a single question at the end. This is how I have it in that chapter. And it's God asking, did you become yourself?
Mm-hmm.
That is the question.
Yeah.
That the self, the deep self, was trying to get recognized and become fulfilled throughout life. If a person does that, then they die without anger, sorrow, and grief. If a person doesn't do that, then they die either forgetting who they are or else in some kind of a confusion of fear and anger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I'm pushing it to the extreme and making it rather pointed because I'm getting older myself and I've been thinking about these things, but also because I'm watching culture develop what could be, you know, it's the baby boomers that now are becoming the potential elder bloomers. But I worry because I keep seeing people trying to get from the end of their life the things they sought in the first half of their life. And there's another thing which I call the second adventure of life, the arc of return, which is not about trying to be accomplished in the world. It's about trying to be deeply wise in oneself.
Yeah. I love it. I think this is so important. And somewhere along my path said, wait a minute, before I go further, and I was in the corporate world myself for 12 years, thinking that that was my destiny, maybe to be, you know, a multinational corporate executive. Somewhere I accepted that role, but didn't know it was a role.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along that path said, I really need to discover who I am first, and then I'll have a better sense of what my mission or purpose is here in this incarnation. And You even say in this same section that we've been talking about, let me go back to the title, because what not to forget in the story that you're talking about the rabbi, but you say here, one of the open secrets of life on earth is that the answer to life's burning question has been inscribed in one's soul to begin with. That's very important at any age. I mean, is it ever too late to all of a sudden, like if that line resonated with somebody, even though there may be 70 or 80 or whatever, and, you know, they've slowed down a little, but, you know, hey, you mean I have something I have yet to discover? What does that do to invigorate one?
I just did a workshop with 75 women, most of whom are older, who recently have become hospice singers. That is to say, they sing to people who are dying.
I love it.
They feel this is part of their calling. It's so obvious because, you know, you can't go to school for it, and it's not going to earn you a lot of money, but it earns them a tremendous satisfaction. And it's like a new career that they've found towards the end of their life, and they are acting like the old wise sisters or the old grandmothers, but they're also fulfilling something meaningful in themselves. And I have been, I'm happy to say, I've been encountering things like this all around the country. But they tend to be in the areas that people don't want to go, in the homeless areas, in the areas where people are hospice, in need of hospice and dying, in places where people are sick, where people are in trouble. In all those areas, people are finding these callings, and many of them are finding them later in life. So, yeah, you always respect people right up to the last breath, because what's trying to awaken from within can occur even in the last minute.
Yeah, yeah. I will speak firsthand and attest to that, because Elizabeth and I, my partner, agreed to bring my mother in to a household in her final months. We didn't know how long she was in an assisted living, but wanted to be with family. And, you know, it was breaking our heart, and we knew it was going to be something very large to take on. But we found a place that had a little apartment for her, you know, and not that it didn't have its challenges, Michael, but at the end times, the last months when we knew things were going downhill, I would have her meet the guests that I was interviewing live in studio if she wanted to. I said, would you like to meet this, African shaman who's downstairs, Ma, you know? Would you like to meet this Buddhist nun who is in town? And she would say yes, and they'd come into her bedroom while she was in the bed, and they would give her like a darshan, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And she woke up in the last weeks, and that was so rewarding, you know? So it's never too late, hey?
No. The soul what happens when, just to keep the subject of the older folks, when people continue to awaken later in life, this is what I've experienced and what I've seen, what happens, what comes back is the dream of their life, that first try to awaken in their youth. And it comes back. And so that's when you meet people who seem more vital than other people, even though they might be 65 or 68 or whatever years old, because they reconnect to the dream that tried to awaken during youth, that is part of what's called the eternal youth and the dream of their life. And it doesn't mean you don't fall asleep. It doesn't mean you don't have arthritis and all that kind of stuff. That's not the point. It means that when you are awake from the center of the soul out. And that in that state, there is something to be given to others, and a satisfaction to be found in oneself. And if this culture is going to turn around, and if people are going to deal with what seemed like impossible tasks, I think it's going to take a fair number of people awakening to who they already are in order to kind of find the new pathways and even bless the younger people.
Yeah, that's a great thought to bridge, you know, people in the second half of their life with the first half and mentor them in some way.
Elizabeth Rose here, co-producer of the thought-provoking and life-enhancing TransitionsTeleseminars.com series, inviting you to listen to prominent guests conversing on love, spirituality, money, sexuality, and the mystical. This series is hosted by your Age Nation Radio Magazine co-host, Alan Huttner, and his good friend, Bill O'Hanlon, psychotherapist, best-selling author, and featured Oprah guest. Guest presenters include Marianne Williamson, Andrew Harvey, Joan Borisenko, Bruce Lipton, Larry Dossey, Harville Hendrix, and many more. A lot of great content available, MP3 audio downloads, PDF transcripts, CEU credits, and free conversations with bonus materials. Go to www.transitionsteleseminars.com for more information.
Harvest the Wisdom, Age Nation Radio. You're listening to Age Nation Radio. It's a state of mind.
Alan Huttner and George Capinelli here, hosting you on Age Nation Radio Magazine. And we're back at you after the Michael Mead interview segment. I loved his sweetness. There's something in his voice that tells you that he's speaking from his heart. He's speaking from authenticity and speaking about some very important subjects. So maybe you and I can do a little PS to that. Not that he needs any editorial comment.
No, he doesn't, but he is. When you talk about authenticity, for me, Michael speaks from a very deep personal experience. He's lived with these myths. He's watched them act themselves out in our time and in other times. It's one of the reasons that I enjoy him so much.
And you and your wife, Sedina, of course, have written on authenticity. So you're qualified to speak about that.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. So, I liked this differentiation that he spoke about between an elder and an older.
Yes.
And you want to take off on that? I mean,
Sure. I think it also is one of the really critical problems of our time, because in a society that more and more people are living longer, in a society in which more and more people have lost sight of their destiny and are adrift, then becoming older is a sad and melancholy experience. It's also an experience in which individuals can be manipulated easily by their fears. Whereas on the other side of that, an elder is someone that's been following their the push of fate or the pull of fate, and they've been living out the challenges of their destiny. And so they inherit a particular kind of wisdom that makes them immobile, truthful, engaged in themselves.
Yeah. When I think about elder wisdom, and there is a lot of it out there, that's contributing to the betterment through whatever that wisdom brings forth in how we live our lives. When I think about older, not to make anybody wrong, I think about the cost associated, whether it's the older spending on things that are necessary as far as medical care, or what's going on in the health care costs of, that insurance companies even need to pay because of what goes on in the last years of life in a person's needing attention, or maybe getting medical attention that they don't even need. So,
well, sure. And the other thing I think is that when you have a society in which a large number of people are olders rather than elders, people in younger generations don't have role models. They don't have people that they want to look up to. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of people that they want to avoid.
Yeah. And Michael talked about something else I liked. It was about forgetting forgetting who we are, forgetting about what it takes to keep us vital and alive. Because I think that's an essential element of somebody saging, or as Zalman would say, saging, aging with grace, with wisdom.
Yeah.
So what are we forgetting?
Well, we're also forgetting indigenous wisdom. We're forgetting the wisdom of history. And every society that has forgotten that has ended up imploding, you know? Mm-hmm. So if we want a world that is vital and engaged, we need to learn how to change ourselves if we're olders into elders, or encourage olders to become elders.
Mm-hmm. he told a story there. I don't want to go into the whole story about this forgetting who we are, which is really, I think, the critical key for anybody at any age. Of course, the earlier you learn who you really are, the authentic self at the core of all the ego persona stuff that we think we are, the sooner we discover that, the better off that the collective is.
Indeed.
So the journey that I think George is talking about, Michael's talking about, is going in and discovering who you are and enjoying that the rest of your life. It's not about doing, it's about being.
And it's about living consciously and aging wisely.
Where did that come from? Living consciously and aging wisely?
Yeah, it comes from understanding that this is the path we have to take as a society.
Well, I love that. And speaking of love, let's go to Dr. Love on Love, eh?
Yes.
With us on our studio line here, Pat Love, Dr. Love, distinguished Professor Love, who does our feature, Love on Love, with us here. And, I've been thinking about people who are, you know, older but vital and alive and that still have an active sex life that includes all the fireworks, you know, the magic. So any stories that come to mind around that, Pat?
Yes, one of my favorite stories is of an 88-year-old woman, a very vibrant, beautiful 88-year-old woman who, much to her children's dismay, took up with a much younger 79-year-old man. And they were carrying on quite a torrid love affair. And it was a small town, and of course everybody knew everybody's business, and the children were just appalled. They were so appalled that the older son called a family meeting, and they talked about what we're going to do with Mama. And they decided that the older daughter would go and have a heart-to-heart with Mama, and she would confront her about her lascivious behavior, so to speak. So anyway, the older daughter goes, and she sits down with her Mama, and she said, Mama, we have to talk. First of all, everybody knows what you're doing. The whole town is talking. And we're so embarrassed and we're so humiliated. And you know, for someone like you to be carrying on like this. And all I can say to you is that raucous sex can kill a person. And Mama just coolly looks at her and she says, well, honey, all I can say is if he dies, he dies.
Wow.
So oftentimes we don't have the image of someone at a certain age enjoying sex. But the truth is, research shows if you have a willing partner, you're going to be sexually active as long as either one of you wants to be. And you're a sensual sexual creature all your life. So enjoy it.
I love it. Okay, Pat, until next time, always a pleasure talking.
Thank you.
Alan and I, during the course of the week, take a look at the news, and we find some things that the only way to describe them is that you've got to be kidding, you know. So this week we're going to give you some of those you got to be kidding kind of facts. In 2010, of course, was a banner year for some people. Financial firms are expected to pay out an all-time high compensation of $144 billion. I mean, that's the budget of small countries, you know.
I don't get it. I mean, you know, with everything that we went through with the meltdown and all the aid and all the assistance, and I still don't know how that has played out economically. And there's a lot of response from the public. I mean, they didn't like this.
Well, and of course, the financial sector isn't listening at all, you know. The Federal Reserve, which most people think is actually a part of the U.S. government, the organization that prints our money and charges us for it, they made record profits in 2010 of $81 billion. Meanwhile, government spending is at an all-time record high of about 6.85 million per minute.
Of course, for many, many people, 2010 was a disastrous year following on 2009, which wasn't that great either as things fell apart. A record number of people became so discouraged they stopped looking for work, and the federal debt hit $14 trillion.
You know, you and I are going to have to do a show on debt, how it's accumulated and how it can be eliminated. But for the time being, it's an astronomical number that we couldn't pay off if we had to pay off, you know.
And I hear, I don't know, you know, George, maybe you can fill us in a little bit on this, but I hear that, you know, with all the repossessions, which apparently hit over a million homes, that it could get worse before it gets better. I mean, this, we're going into 2011, 2012, the problem isn't resolved.
No, it's not. And you know, banks foreclosed on more than almost 2.9 million homes this year. Everyone likes to think that we're moving out of this bubble, this economic crisis that we've been in. There are some good signs, but there's an awful lot out there. I mean, that the fact that there are so many people who have stopped looking for work has such sadness in it. In supposedly the wealthiest nation in the world, it's unconscionable.
It gets to a line that I was spouting over the years about, what's the real battle here? What's the real conflict, you know? And I put it in terms of have and have-nots, or even a class war. And people throw out terms like oligarchy or plutocracy. And if that doesn't change, then more people will be statistically included in these numbers in the coming years. So we, all of us, maybe we were the middle class. I don't know where we fit in the scheme of things right now, but...
Well, yeah, and I think at the heart of all this is a struggle for the soul of democracy. Are we a democratic nation, and do we believe in the commons and the common good, or are we a corporatocracy or some other form of government? Big questions, very big questions. And the final question is, are you kidding?
Well, I woke up this other morning to this meeting in my head. My ego had formed a terrorist group, and I knew what lie ahead. There'd be death threats on my confidence and extortions of my heart, and I'd have to remain in control so as not to fall apart. So I called my new age girlfriend up, who'd self-helped herself for years, and I asked her how to overcome all my unrest and inner fears. She said force would drive it deeper, I needed to love my fear away. Well, she sounded so together, I was ashamed of being afraid. So I called my local talk show, radio therapist of the air. She told me to write myself little love notes and paste them up everywhere. She said it was not good to be ashamed, I should get therapy or meditate. But then I realized I felt guilty, I was ashamed of being afraid.
Been there? Done that? What's new? Age Nation Radio. Stop waiting. Now's the time. Age Nation Radio.
Now it's time for our editorial segment, Over the Hill and Out of Luck, today with George.
Thanks, Alan. In a world where the worship of economics has replaced the worship of God, compassion and our commitment to the common good are waning. Indeed, we've become the land of me rather than the land of us. Nowhere is this more apparent than in the fact that age is viewed as a kind of malady rather than a natural part of the life process. And aging citizens are viewed as a liability. And if you don't believe me, look at Britain, Ireland, France, Greece, and a whole lot of other countries that are struggling to deal with the economic crisis by reducing retiree rights, increasing the retirement age, and decreasing medical coverage for older citizens. The same conversations going on in Japan and Spain. In China, elders are being restricted to rural areas so young people can flood the cities and China can seem to be the great cheap manufacturing place. But wait a decade or two when the bill for discarding those billions of older Chinese comes due. The conversation is gaining traction here in the U.S. as well under the guise of fiscal responsibility, a political agenda that advances the well-being of the rich and large corporations over the needs of and well-being of the majority is also gaining. Government stimulus programs and deficit spending is being thrown under the bus in favor of draconian budget cuts and what is called a free market economy. It's free, all right. Free for some people to do whatever they want to do, even if it negatively impacts the commons or the environment or education or health care. Free means get out of my way so I can practice unrestrained selfishness and greed. Unfortunately, all this is happening at precisely the time the world's population is growing older. So in many ways, the writing is on the wall. The 50 and over crowd is not only considered over the hill, but out of luck. So I say hold on to your hats, because no matter how much money you think you have or how well protected you believe you are from the vagaries of life, when our world reaches this tipping point in which 50% of the population will be over 50, no one will be immune from the challenges that lie ahead. And I mean no one, young, old, rich, or poor. Can we do something about it? Plenty. Stop buying this nonsense that all we need to do is cut spending. What we need is for everyone to start paying their fair share of taxes. And that means the wealthiest 10% as well as the rest of us stiffs. It means corporations that used to pay 25 to 30% in annual taxes and that now pay only 5 to 7% or less and send their profits offshore need to step up to the bar. It means rebuilding our manufacturing infrastructure so Americans can get jobs again and can support their lives with a modicum of dignity. It means we have to get out of places in the world that we don't belong. It also means Americans, older Americans, have to stop allowing themselves to be manipulated by those who claim they're doing all this to protect our freedoms, while in reality, they just want to end our national commitment to the common good. And we can do this. If you are a part of the over-the-hill gang, that is if you're 38 or older, or if you have parents that are in this age group, then pay attention. We have the numbers, we have enough financial power, we have the experience and the know-how. Remember, we're the ones that were on the front lines in civil rights, human rights, women's rights, nuclear disarmament, and the environmental movement. Yes, all we lack is the will to make sure the world we live in is a sane and sustainable place that's built to last. We need to send a clear and powerful signal to those who want to take the money and run that there's no place to run, and that our job is not to grab all that we can, but to build a better world, and for all of us, not just for 4 or 5% of us who have their hands around our throat.
Well said, George. More to come next week when we continue looking at this most critical challenge of the 21st century. Our featured guest will again be Michael Mead, who takes us deeper into trouble with grist for solutions and our awakening. We also engage our good humor, good music, and special features to help us live consciously and age wisely. Find out more about Age Nation online at agenation.com. While there, read our online magazine, visit with our team of experts, and sign up for our free newsletter, and also for other goodies.
Over 40 and looking for answers to the challenges and remarkable opportunities ahead. Are you under 40 and want to know more about the world you'll soon inherit? Then Do Not Go Quietly is the perfect book for you. Inspiring, empowering, full of practical guidance, this best-selling book has already won 3 2013 book awards. It is a powerful call to action into a life of genuine purpose for those who weren't born yesterday. Wise woman Jean Houston says it's profound, compassionate, and deeply useful. So live the life you were born to live, and remember, you're never too old or too young to live your dreams. Available on Amazon.com, at Barnes & Noble, and bookstores everywhere. For free downloads, interviews, and a lot more, visit DoNotGoQuietlyTheBook.com.
The best is yet to come. Age Nation Radio.